The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn Beck.
Anthony Bourdain, gifted storyteller, the writer who took CNN viewers around the world, has died. He was 61 years old. He died at his own hand. CNN confirmed. It is with extraordinary sadness we confirm the death of our friend and our colleague, Anthony Bourdain. His love of great adventure, new friends, fine food, drink, remarkable stories of the world made him a unique storyteller. His talents never ceased to amaze us, and we'll miss him very much. Our thoughts and prayers are with his daughter and his family at this incredibly difficult time. Bourdain was in France. He was working on an upcoming episode of Parts Unknown. His close friend Eric, the French chef, found Bourdain unresponsive at his hospital room early this morning. What's happening to us? Kate Spade took her own life, hung herself with a scarf. There is a crisis that is happening. By the way, please, if you're in this situation, please hear my voice. I have been there. I know. I know how tired you are of hearing people say, just get over it. Just be happy. Go see a movie. I don't know. What do you like to do? Why don't you start doing more of what you like to do? I know how tired you are of hearing that, and how tired you are of screaming in your head. There is a suicide hotline. If you are thinking that, please call 800-273-TALK. 800-273-TALK. The lines are staffed with paid professionals, unpaid volunteers. Most of them have gone through it. For any of us who have gone through this, we know what it feels like. We know that it makes sense to you. I can't tell you how many days I honestly thought my family will be much better off without me. Everyone will be better off without me. And I can't take the pain anymore. Even people with physical pain, because I've had both. I've had physical pain in the last 5 years that I have looked at my wife with tears in my eyes and said, I can't take it another day. It's not the same. You're going to see a lot about this when Anthony Bourdain, because this one's going to hit close to home to the press. They will be searching for answers because they knew him and he seemed happy. I mean, he was always saying, what makes you happy? He was doing the job that they would all love to do. He was successful. You see, Kate Spade's husband came out and he said, there's no truth to the rumor that she took her life because of business. Suicide rates have increased by 25% in the United States. 25%. 25 states, half of the United States, has seen a rise in suicide by more than 30%. We understand the... No, we don't. We all talk a good game about the suicides that are happening with our soldiers, but they're invisible to us. We don't want to look. We don't want to look. We forget what we're capable of. We forget who we really are. And when you are in clinical depression, the mind is your biggest enemy. Because it knows you better than you know you. It knows every single trapdoor. It knows every excuse. It knows every problem. And when it is off balance, it convinces you 100% that it is you, and you try everything you can. Wine, women, song, anything you can to alleviate the pain, and you do anything you can to find the source of what is making you unhappy. For a long time, and I would guess that Anthony Bourdain, he went to all of these regions all over the world because he was looking for something. His questions were always, what makes you happy? What makes you happy? That's not a question, as we probably can figure now, that a reporter asks, that a guy travels into the jungles and goes all over the world and always asks that question, what makes you happy? He was searching for the missing piece of him. People can understand being depressed. People can understand being bummed out. People can understand, hey, just get over it. But if you've gotten to the point to where suicide makes sense, you know that's insane. You don't while you're thinking of it, but you right now know that's insane. No rational person thinks that way. Everything in you is built to stop you from doing it. You know how you walk on, you know, you're on the Empire State Building, or you're someplace near an edge, and your butt even clenches. That's your butt saying, back up. Every part of your body tells you when you're in danger. Everything inside, everything in your mind, every sense, alarm bells go off. You're in danger. You're in trouble. Back away. So how could you put a gun in your mouth? How could you possibly tie a scarf around your neck and hang yourself? Because something is suppressing. Something is suppressing that mechanism of madness. There is nothing different between Anthony Bourdain, Kate Spade, and our kids that are killing each other. It's the same madness. Perhaps the difference is we were lucky enough with Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain that their madness only thought that other people had value, and only they did not. There is something wrong. There is something deeply and profoundly wrong in our society. And we have fleeting moments, just fractions of seconds, to where that window opens up and our guard is down and we're not fighting about things. There's this moment that we can open up and go, oh my gosh, there is something really wrong. By the end of the day, experts will have all of their expert talking points. We will have all kinds of stats thrown at us. Our eyes will glaze over, or we will think, oh, well, they know. Somebody's doing something. Why do you think the opioid crisis is so crazy right now? There's a hole in each of us. And people are looking, instead of for an answer, they are instead looking for something to cover that hole. Because too many of us are afraid to look down into that abyss. We are too afraid to look inside of ourselves, because even the strongest among us are terrified that if we look inside, there's not really anything of real value in there. According to Redfin, homes sold faster than ever in April 2018. Prices rose at 7.6% to a new median high of $302,000. Now, this is the first time the national median home price has surpassed the $300,000 mark. For most Americans, their home is the biggest investment that they're ever going to make. This is why we built realestateagentsitrust.com. Working with a right agent can make a significant difference in the outcome of buying or selling. This is one thing that I am really, truly proud of. This is one thing that we really built right. And it's really making a difference in people's lives. Not just the business transaction, but we get letters all the time from people who say, I miss my real estate agent. They were so great. We have real estate agents that, honestly, there's this woman up in, I think she was in Spokane. And she just needed help selling her home. She needed she needed curb appeal. The real estate agent came out from realestateagentsitrust.com and on their own time, just worked with her in the garden and worked painting the house and worked getting it in shape. She didn't get any more money for it. They're just good people. Our agents are fully vetted and handpicked for their team, for their knowledge, for their track record, for their skill. They know how much your home is worth in your area. Thousands of families have already tried this out and sold their house or bought a new one at a great price. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Sell your home now, fast and for the most amount of money. It's RealEstateAgentsITrust.com.
It's a really interesting explanation there, Glenn, of talking about Anthony Bourdain, who apparently committed suicide. We had the Kate Spade suicide this week. And as someone who has never, thank God, struggled with something like that, it's completely not understandable to me. I can't grasp what would bring you to that point.
I saw a tweet last night about Kate Spade that said, well, that's just what weak-minded people do. Really? Really? That's what weak-minded people do.
I mean, not to defend that point, which is kind of mean, but it's like, it does seem completely foreign to, I think, a lot of people. I know, like, I've always heard this of, like, you know, someone that goes through, you saw this in the 1987 Wall Street crash, right? Where the rumor was that people were killing themselves all over because they lost their entire fortune, everything they worked for. And every time I hear those things, I'm just like, well, how is that? How have you decided that that is the end all be all of your life, your value?
There's a difference, though, between like a crash, something that happens fast. Mm-hmm. And for instance, the crash, you're on Wall Street. This happened in 2007 in New Canaan, where I used to live. There was a crash. Literally, I was the only one who kept my house on the street.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I lived in a town that was almost all Wall Street. They all lost their house. So you would lose your identity, your home. You would think you were going to ruin your family. It's the end of the world. I can't get out of this hole.
But logically, you know that's not true, right? Like losing a home is not the end of your life.
Correct. Correct.
Even losing your family is not the end of your life.
I don't think I think it's different. I could be wrong, but I think it's different. It's more complex when it's a slow decline. Right. When there's a fast shock, mm-hmm. you can see somebody who leans a certain way or has put their value in something else and feels totally trapped, you know, and you just don't know what to do. Remember the Netflix special where we just talked about it a couple of months ago.
Where they try to get people to kill someone within like an hour and they were able to, you know.
Yeah, able to do it. Yeah. Okay. That's not rational. That's insane. But that's just, I've got my back against the wall. I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so you just make a rash, stupid decision. That's different than clinical depression.
Right.
Clinical depression is there is no regulator. There's nothing. It's normal to have a bad day. Now, think of this as you have a bad day. But then the next day, you're feeling a little better, or later in the day, or, you know, a week later, you're starting to feel better. Think of this as an elevator that only goes down. Only goes down. There is nothing in your chemicals, nothing in your brain, nothing that naturally goes, okay, you're all right. Because it's more than psychological. It is chemical.
Yeah.
So the elevator just keeps going down lower and lower and lower and lower. Now, think about how bad you feel at the worst moment. You haven't had a good day in clinical depression. Sometimes for years, you have not felt that. So you're at the end of your rope. But the more important part is you're arguing with you.
Yeah, that was the part that I think help me understand that a little bit, because everybody has that, right? You're arguing with your own head of what you should do. If there's something you know you shouldn't do, mm-hmm. and you find yourself occasionally giving into it, whether it's, you know, everything from, you know, an extra drink to some other type of addiction, even food, right? If you're trying to eat healthy, I know this happens with me all the time because as many could see, I don't eat healthy, but you get through multiple weeks of eating healthy, and then there's one night and, you know, someone just pops over unexpectedly, let's order a pizza, and you're like, I didn't even expect this to happen. This is, and you go through a set of arguments that convinces you this time it's okay.
For me, it is, there is no difference between the alcohol and the bowl of ice cream in my mind the way I justified it. So I would get up every morning and I would say, with alcohol, I'm not going to drink today. Today, I'm just not going to do it today. But by the end of the day, I had found a reason, and it was very logical. Today was really hard. Today was just, I got beat up so badly. I'm just tired. I'll do this tomorrow. Today, I'm just going to have this drink. Today, I'm just going to have that bowl of ice cream. It's been a really hard day. And it makes total sense to you. But you've failed yourself. And that failure every day begins to build and grind on you. And you start to say, you're worthless. You're not capable of anything. You are so pathetically weak. and you create what you think.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Every time there is an overdose or a suicide, you will hear all kinds of talking heads and all kinds of anchors who are searching for answers. What could have been done? What could have been done? When it comes to alcoholism, nothing. Nothing. Drugs, nothing. Unless that person is reaching out for help. Nothing. It has to come from within. When it comes to suicide, I mentioned yesterday, Bobby Drees, guy I haven't talked to in I don't know how long. Years. He saved my life. He saved my life. I was headed toward a bridge abutment with my name on it. I just didn't have the courage to do it, but I was headed in that direction. Every day I would drive by it. Please, Lord, give me the strength just to drive my car into this bridge abutment. And I'm looking for anything that makes me feel good, and everything, alcohol, drugs, etc., would make me feel worse. It would make me feel better temporarily, and then it would make me feel worse. Couldn't get out of the cycle. I told Bobby, we worked together, and I said, Bobby, I'm leaving. I'm just going away. He said, where are you going? I said, I don't know. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, I don't know. I just everything is falling apart on me, and I have to get away from all of these problems here, and I'm just making things worse, and I gotta go. Now, he had been suicidal. A lesser man probably would have said, that doesn't make any sense. Come on, Glenn, let's go out and have a drink, or come on, let's do something together, or just sleep on it. You're gonna be better. He knew, just by the way I was talking, this isn't reasonable. He said, will you come with me first someplace? I said, where? He said, come with me and meet my doctor at the hospital. And I said, I'm not going to a hospital. Bobby, you don't know. I'm causing all of these problems. I'm doing these things. He said, I know. Just come with me to the hospital. And I remember going with him. I don't remember the hospital. I just remember the room and the doctor looking at me with compassion and saying, it's not you. It's not you. After some tests were done and they were just talking to me, it's not you. Please give this a try. And I remember, I don't even know, it was like a fog lifted. It was within 2-3 weeks. Fog lifted, and I remember brushing my teeth in the morning and looking at myself in the mirror and thinking, where have you been? Talking to myself, where has this good Glenn been? Where is this optimistic? Where have you been? People don't understand that. When I sobered up, this is 10 years after being suicidal. When I sobered up, a good friend of mine, Jim Lago, who does mornings in Corpus Christi, he said to me, Glenn, when you least expect it, expect it. I said, what do you mean? He said, you're going to want to drink. And I said, I know. I'm getting, I always to drink at 5 o'clock. And so I'm going to stay busy at 5 o'clock. He said, yeah, whatever. When you least expect it, he said, because your brain, you're down, You know, if you've ever been to a psychiatrist or even a dentist, when the dentist says to you, are you flossing every day? And you know what the answer is. No. Well, yes, you know, I haven't for a little while now, but why are you lying to them? The same thing happens to many people as they go to seek help at a psychiatrist. They're willing to go so far, but there's a sub-basement that they know that the doctor doesn't know, but they do. They're never going that. They'll give the doctor enough. Why they're lying to the doctor, why they are wasting their time, the doctor's time, their money, I don't know, but we've all done it, and anybody who has been to psychotherapy has done it for sure. I'm just not going there. Well, that's where your brain is living. Your brain knows all of that. Your brain knows the tricks that you play, the excuses that you make. It knows every single back door to you. It knows your tricks because it's you. And so you find yourself arguing with you. It knows the worst things when you're trying to talk yourself out of it and saying, no, I'm really not. It will remind you of the worst things you've ever done. And it'll even expand on those things beyond what they were. 5 years in to sobriety, there was a day that I was just like, screw it. I'm going to drink. And as soon as I said that to myself, my breath was taken away because I remembered my friend's words. When you least expect it. That day, my excuse made sense. That day, I had realized then, oh my gosh, I have spent the last few weeks just building a case that this is reasonable. That this time it is different. I didn't do that. The sub-basement of my brain was doing that. It was convincing me. It was churning. It was plotting against me. That's who you're in an argument with all the time. And you know that. Your better self, your worse self, you're in that inner dialogue. Now imagine you're coming to that gunfight completely unarmed. That's what happens when people have clinical depression. You are walking into a gunfight and you got nothing. You're naked. There's not even a rock around you to throw. I find it fascinating because people will say, Kate Spade, she had everything. People will say, Anthony Bourdain, he was at the height. He had won every award. He had the show that everybody, you know, in TV news wanted to do. He was famous. He got to travel the world. That should tell us something, America. That should tell us something. That ain't it. That is not what life is about. That's not what makes you happy. In fact, the more success you have, the worse it gets. Because if you're feeling this way when you have nothing, if you are capable of holding on long enough and then being successful, you think it's the next job that's going to make you happy. It's the next car. It's the next house. It's the next wife. It's the next whatever. It's the next stop in the middle of the jungle. This time I'm going to go to China and I'm going to have dog head soup. And this is the one where it's all going to come together for me. Kate Spade, she sold, 59% of her company? What did she sell it for? $2 billion? How could she possibly be unhappy? Because it's not about fame. It's not about fortune. It's about finding meaning and who we really are. Question with boldness even the very existence of God, for there be a God. He must surely rather honest, questioning over blindfolded fear. I've always told you that story as the way I found God. But it's much more important to me than that. If you've read my book, The Christmas Sweater, that dream happened to me, and I think it was divine. I was at the end of my rope. I was trying to sober up. I had done everything that I could, but I wasn't making any progress. And in my own head, there was the good Glenn saying, "You gotta look further. You gotta go deeper." And the typical Glenn said, "Please, your mom's death and all of that stuff, it's old news. You're over it. It's no big deal. Everybody has problems. Get over it. Grow up." The part of me that was rejecting people saying to me, "Get over it," I was saying that to myself when myself said, "Dig deeper." I was unwilling to, because I was afraid. I was afraid that there was nothing there. I wasn't afraid that there was a worse guy there. I was afraid there was nothing there, that I really was this kid that was still afraid of being himself. I was afraid that there wasn't anything good. There wasn't anything remarkable. There was just nothing. And I refused to look. Question with boldness even the very existence of God, for there, if there be a God, he must surely rather honest questions over blindfolded fear. Of course. The only way a flower can grow is if there's rain. We avoid the rain. We avoid the storms of our life because no good will come of that. All good will come from that. Appreciate the storm of your life. Look at what the storm of your life will teach you. But it takes incredible courage. And if you are someone who is depressed, you're at the end of your courage. I am sorry. I feel like I have wasted 45 minutes trying to explain to people who have not gone through this what it feels like to go through this. And most of you, and I thank God for this, will never go through it. I should have spent my time talking directly to someone who is going through it now. Please. There is a reason you are listening to me right now. Please. Do not dismiss this opportunity. There is hope. There is a glorious, glorious. It is the difference between the first part of The Wizard of Oz and when Dorothy hits Oz and she opens that door. It is color. I know all of the color, all of the good, all of the sunshine, all of the good feelings. It is gone for you right now. It doesn't feel like anything is going to change, but it does. It does. Life is about to get so good for you. Just please reach out for help. All right, so now's a good time of the year in Dallas because it's like we're living, I don't know, under a flamethrower? Maybe. I'm not sure what a flamethrower feels like, but it's probably, I mean, it's probably pretty close to what it feels like living here in Dallas. It's, you know, it's a little warmer here, but you're not going outside unless, I mean, this is the time where you go outside and even your pool is hot. It's nasty. Now, throw in the glory of the allergy season. Oh, man, there's nothing better. Welcome to Texas. Anyway, FilterBy can help you. They can help you make sure that your air conditioning is not overtaxed and it's not going to go down at a time like this. Also, they can help filter the air to make sure that all of the pollen stays out of the air that you breathe. Your air conditioning unit is working overtime right now. Make sure you keep a fresh set of filters in your system, and you can find them at FilterBy right now, America's leading provider of HVAC filters for homes and small businesses. They have over 600 sizes. They ship for free within 24 hours. They're all made right here in America, and they even have auto delivery, and that'll knock 5% off the order if you just, you know, would like your life to be made a little easier. Who doesn't? Save time, save money, breathe better. Make sure your air conditioning system is pampered a bit, because you need it. FilterBy.com. That's FilterBuy.com.
I don't agree with the idea that that's a wasted half an hour. It's an idea that it convinces me a little bit that it's could be more common. Like, it's not a foreign illness. It's not Ebola. It's the common cold. People could go through it, and it's, I think you spent a good amount of time understanding, making that understandable.
I think the common cold is a good example. It is spreading. It's flu season in America.
Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Well, forget the Kim Summit going down in just a few days. The real fireworks are happening at the G7. Well, at least over Twitter. President Trump and Macron came out swinging over social media yesterday. This year's gathering of the richest nations of the world and their privilege, otherwise known as the Group of Seven or G7, is setting up to be less like the gathering of lords and ladies and more like Lord of the Flies. It's a street brawl. Now, here's just a couple of the haymakers thrown yesterday. First one comes from the French. The American president may not mind being isolated, but neither do we mind signing a six-country agreement if need be. Ooh, Frenchy Freshman is getting a little testy. The president took that shot on the jaw and counterpunched with his own uppercut, saying, "Why isn't the European Union and Canada informing the public that for years they have used massive trade tariffs and non-monetary trade barriers against the U.S.? Totally unfair to our farmers, workers, and companies. Take down your tariffs and barriers, or we'll more than match you." Oh, boy. Apparently, President Trump debated whether or not even bothering showing up to the G summit this year, which I think is a really good thing. I mean, nobody agrees with what he's doing, so what's the point? I don't agree with the tariffs that he's doing, you know, the trade war, or that he's even flirting with one. It's not what we need to be doing. But I agree with one thing. Who really gives a crap about the G7? By all means, skip it. I mean, watch a movie. Something else could be easily replacing your time. I love President Macron's Twitter threat. Let me re-quote again. Neither do we mind signing a six-country agreement if it need be. Oh. Hang on, that could be bad, but I'm just right now trying to figure out a single agreement that the G7 signed that had any real impact, like, ever. I got a better question. What the heck is it that these guys do? The original Group of Seven was formed in the 70s after the collapse of the exchange rate in 1971. They came together in a crisis, but they've done a whole lot of nothing ever since. The group has now become an elaborate meeting where the lords and ladies, may I present? Oh, shut up. They just show how awesome they are. Then they get together for a photo, snap some selfies with their peers before catching their flight back home. But addressing real problems like the collapsing Italian economy? Nah. address the global debt crisis that we all started in 2008? Nope.
Let's do this. We'll get dressed up in ridiculous clothes and go on a fox hunt instead.
Oh, fox hunt. I can tell you where the foxes are hiding, no?
By the way, the meeting is being held in Canada this year. Get a load of what the our neighbors up north have established as this year's G7 agenda.
To advance gender equality, fight climate change, and promote respect for diversity and inclusion.
Okay, thanks, Canada. Thank you. Thank you for just putting a little bit of frosting on this cake and reminding me just how ridiculous, irrelevant this whole G7 summit has really become.
Oh, climate change.
It's Friday, June 8th.
Little bit
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Diversity, huh? I am gender fluid right now, and have I got some fluids for you? Huh?
Oh, my gosh. Welcome to the program, Mr. Bill O'Reilly. How are you, sir?
You know, your Macron imitation bag has got a little Mexican in it.
Does it?
You know, I thought,
you know what?
Gringo, we don't need you here.
No, that is a totally different. In every language, somebody goes, got you. anyway, Bill O'Reilly, welcome to the program. Where am I wrong on the G7 summit?
Well, it does matter to the American people that we get hosed in our trade deals all over the world. And as always, you know, Trump goes in there and he sees 8 years of Barack Obama and then 8 years before that of George W. Bush doing absolutely nothing and having these unbelievable trade imbalances rise and rise and rise. So it's Trump isn't wrong by saying that the United States gets hammered in trade with all of these foreign countries. He's right. We do. But then he goes in and instead of saying to them, look, we can do it the hard way or the easy way. You know, the easy way is that you do take firm steps and take more of our goods. Or I can threaten tariffs and threaten to come over and build a golf course in your country. You know, that kind of thing.
I would like that one better than tariffs.
Yeah,
hey, Canada.
That would scare him.
He's going to start building golf courses.
But you're right, and Americans don't care. They don't know what G7 is. I feel sorry for Putin. It used to be G8.
Mm-hmm.
But once Putin's murder rate got over 100,000, they booted him out.
Right, right.
So it's the G7, and they're up there, and they're all-inclusive except for Vladimir.
Now, would you mind if it was the G6?
Who do you want to boot?
Us.
Look, all I want is good things for the American people and the economy here.
Right.
I think ultimately Trump will get his better trade status already. China says, well, we'll buy $90 billion more a year of U.S. goods already. And he'll get that up to like 125 or something like that. So that, and then he'll drop the tariffs. That's what he always does. And so the Europeans are saber rattling for their own people. They know that they'll make a deal. Trump may have to get an LGBT person to make the deal for him. That's all he's got to do is bring in that somebody of that stature.
Listen to Bill O'Reilly Bill O'Reilly once again with his hate for leaving off the cue for questioning. There's two cues now. So, you know, he's got the first cue, but not the second cue.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. Bill O'Reilly. Bill, I am more concerned about the tariffs than you are, yes. Of course. However, I will tell you there's something else going on that Trump has, you know, that Trump is capable of using, and that is the sell-off of the balance sheet from the Fed. It is killing countries all around the world, and they're getting a double whammy right now. Should we do anything about that? I don't think we should, but do you think we should do anything about the sell-off of the Fed for the chase of U.S. dollars?
This is unbelievable macroeconomics by Glenn Beck, everyone. Are you processing this? This is incredible. I have no blanket idea, Beck. I don't even know what you said.
Wow. Wow, okay. All right. Well, I'm a geek on this, and I know I'm a geek on this.
Yeah, I'm very impressive.
Yeah.
Can you do it in your Macron accent?
Oh, of course I can. You are sucking up and soaking up all of the reserve currency. We cannot afford to lose these dollars.
All right. So, Bill, let me go to this.
Yeah.
Your latest tweet has been on the Inspector General Michael Horowitz. Give me your thoughts.
This is such a dodge. So next Thursday, Trump's birthday, the Justice Department finally going to put out its report, only it's not going to put out its full report, just the Hillary Clinton stuff, not the Russian collusion stuff. I'm going, wait a minute. How long do you need to put out an initial report on the FBI in both matters? But they're not going to do the Russians, just Hillary. We all know the FBI, the fix was in. We all know that, okay? That's what it's going to say. It's not going to say it that harshly, but it's going to say that Comey and McCabe, the two top-ranking FBI officials, went light on Hillary Clinton. They held back stuff. They exonerated her before she was interviewed. They didn't put her people under oath. They allowed Susan Rice to be in, who's a suspect in the case, to be in the interview. It's insane. There's like 50 things. Then they're going to say McCabe lied to FBI agents. He'll be charged. He's going to be charged, okay? But Comey, he'll kind of fly above it in this netherworld unless McCabe turns on Comey, which is absolutely possible if they squeeze him, if the Justice Department squeezes him. Meantime, we don't know anything about Mueller and Russian collusion.
Okay, so hang on. May I play devil's advocate here?
Yes.
Could it actually be good that we are not getting the Trump and the Clinton stuff at the same time, because the media would only focus on the Trump stuff and completely bury the Clinton stuff?
No, but the media can't focus on the Trump stuff unless there's something there.
No, I know that. That's what I mean. So, you know, if we're just getting the Hillary stuff first, doesn't that give it enough air to have maybe a little bit of a flame in the media?
Doubt it. The media is going to, this is a one-day story for them, and then they'll tuck it away, and it'll be, well, she doesn't really matter. But the corruption of the FBI is hurting the country, and that's what I always come back to. I want the best for the American people. You got a president who's going to go over to Singapore and try to negotiate this little rocket man out of blowing up the world, okay? That's pretty serious, I'd say. Well, what is CNN and the New York Times concentrating on? Mueller, Russia, Russia, Russia. Donald Jr. I mean, it's insane. It's insane. So what they could do was put this in a place where it would be harder to use Mueller as a cudgel, word of the day, cudgel, on Trump. Because Mueller doesn't have anything on Trump. He doesn't. But why the Justice Department isn't doing this is because it embarrasses Rod Rosenstein. He appointed Mueller. And it undercuts Mueller if he ever did come up with something. So they don't want to do that. It's all politics, Beck, not looking out for the folks.
Bill, I'm going to take a break. And when we come back, will you take the American people through the McCabe story and what do you think is going to happen and what it really means?
Okay.
And then also I want to get into your article, your latest op-ed also on BillO'Reilly.com called The News Snooze. New research shows that people are worn out by the news. And, you know, we've talked about it internally here in the last couple of days and what we think it means and who it's talking about and why we are fatigued by the news. But we'll get your opinion in just a minute when we come back. First, let me share some recent feedback that we have gotten back from our partners at Palm Beach Letter and Tika Tiwari's crypto course. 97% of the listeners who have taken this crypto course give it a 4 or 5 star rating. It is something that is very, very much worth your time. The Crypto Master Course. Now, what this is this will explain what blockchain is. It will explain how to buy and sell crypto, why it's important, what the pitfalls are, because even if you're not going to invest in it, you need to understand it. It is the future. Here's some of the comments. Lessons are easy to understand, straight to the point, helps me understand how to go about investing in cryptocurrencies as well as blockchain technology. I was really, really satisfied with the lessons, especially 5 and 6, which clarified some misperceptions I had about buying and selling cryptocurrencies. Thanks for these valuable tools. Another one. Although I began with a solid understanding of crypto, this presentation had real meat on the bone, which added to my trading strength and flexibility that is now better developed. Simply stated, my understanding and confidence have been noticeably enhanced. Thank you so much. We were looking for an expert that could explain it to us. We convinced him to explain it to you. SmartCryptoCourse.com. Go there now. SmartCryptoCourse.com or call 1-877-PBLBeck. 1-877-PBLBeck. SmartCryptoCourse.com. All right. Bill, here's how I think a lot of Americans feel. And the Pew Research report, which we'll get into later, kind of verifies that people are just exhausted by the news. So when the McCabe thing comes out, I think there's a lot of people that are kind of interested in it, actually probably really interested in it, but they haven't really been following it because they just don't think it's going to make any difference, even though it's going to turn out to be really good for the conservatives. You know, if you're playing politics, it's going to be really good, really bad for the Clintons, bad for the Democrats, bad for the press, but nothing's going to happen. So I haven't been following it. So fill me in, Bill O'Reilly.
Well, it's going to be tough not to indict Andrew McCabe for lying to the FBI. Since you already did that to the National Security Advisor for the Trump administration, you know, it's equal justice for all. Mm-hmm. So what happened there was that McCabe, second in command to Comey, that means that he had hands-on responsibility for the Hillary Clinton email situation, because that's always the way it is. It's always the second guy who does the day-to-day, and then Comey floats above it. He does his little meetings with everybody. He goes out on the road, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. All right, so McCabe then apparently gets orders from the Obama administration through Attorney General Loretta Lynch. Now, you know, there's not a smoking gun. I don't think you're going to see a memo to that kind of. It is basically, look, you know, this is a low-level beef. Let's try to wrap it up quickly. That's code for, hey, you know, we don't want to see her in chains. That's the way it goes in the government. You know, when you hear the word, let's wrap it up quickly in any government office, that's the message to the person, we don't really want to pursue this any further. Mm-hmm. That's what McCabe got from Loretta Lynch, okay? So McCabe knows he's in big trouble. Now, McCabe is second in command of the FBI. His wife runs as a Democrat for, I think it was the House of Representatives in Virginia. I think it was. And gets a lot of money from the Clinton's best friend, Terry McAuliffe. So there's a personal connection. There's all kinds of connections here, right? And the Obama administration surely didn't want the Democratic presidential nominee to have to be arrested. That wouldn't be good, Beck. That's not a good thing.
Right.
All right. So all of this is going to come out, but in words that are fuzzy. So Michael Horowitz is going to say to the Senate Judiciary Committee, well, you know, they could have been more aggressive, and they held back stuff, and they didn't do this, and they didn't do that. The Republicans will wail on them, and the Democrats will try to make excuses. So that's where we are right now. But I think Andrew McCabe will be indicted. I don't see how he can't be indicted for lying.
So I go back to my original question. Okay, so he's indicted, but
yes.
Nothing really changes. Loretta Lynn, I mean, we can all draw our own conclusions to what was said, you know, on the tarmac, what was really going on, why the language of the memo was changed, you know, all of that stuff. But we're never really going to hold anybody responsible for any of that, are we?
Well, except for McCabe, right?
Yeah. Well,
and again, if McCabe flips on Comey, which is entirely possible, because the Justice Department doesn't like Comey. Then
is Comey still Is that a big fish? I mean, I know it's a bigger those guys are still working for people.
Here's why it's a big fish. If you can establish that the second in command at the FBI is a liar and the fix was in the Hillary Clinton investigation, then you can't do anything to Donald Trump at all or anybody associated with Donald Trump.
But wait. That's not what
were investigating.
Right, but that's not what I think people are looking for. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, Bill.
What do you think the folks want, Beck?
Real justice. They want real justice.
If McCabe is indicted, he goes to trial.
But what you just said was, look, if you do that, then you can't do anything to Donald Trump. No, I want to know if these guys, if the fix was in for Hillary Clinton, then good. So then what is the truth? Let's put those people away and what was the actual truth?
The actual truth is that Hillary Clinton did not secure classified information. That's the truth. That's a crime.
But nothing's going to happen. But nothing will happen to them.
Well, not to her.
Yeah.
Because she's already been exonerated.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the truth. You want to know the truth? She didn't secure classified information as Secretary of State for her own personal reasons. That's the truth. That's the case.
All right. You know, and the press will leave that one alone. But if you try to use that same thing and say, well, but now you can't go after Trump, they're not going to leave this alone until they're just untimely death. They're just burning down. It's group suicide in the media. They just don't see what they're doing to themselves. Back in just a second.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Bill O'Reilly, let's go to the whistleblower or the leak that has been found now, a 26-year-old girl from the New York Times that was sleeping with a 50-year-old guy who was, you know, on the Senate Intelligence Committee. She has tweeted like in 2013 about, hey, is anybody interested in like a Zoe Barnes relationship? Just totally kidding. Well, no, apparently she wasn't. And so now the press is saying, oh, my gosh, what a victim. What a victim. Okay, Bill. All right. I understand. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. Holly the terror dog strikes again.
Okay. Look, so what do you think of this?
This is usual for these media outlets. There's all kinds of stuff going on that is corrupt. I'm fired up on this. I wrote a column on it, as you kindly mentioned, on BillO'Reilly.com, by saying that not only are Americans fatigued, but the whole business is collapsing. The whole journalism business, and you can see that the establishment knows it, which is they fight back so hard now at all their little parties and conventions. Oh, we're the defenders of freedom. Let's give us awards. We need more awards. But, you know, you have a system now where the Trump administration, and this comes from Sessions, who's not going to be around much longer, by the way, as Attorney General. These leaks, they're going to hold people accountable for them. And, you know, if they have to subpoena reporters, they will. And if they have to spy on reporters, they will. Because they should. We can't run a government when we have one-way leaks.
Wait. We should spy on reporters?
On reporters, if there is evidence of crime.
Wait, I can't.
You're breaking up.
Sorry. If there is evidence of a crime, you have to have evidence of a crime. And leaking classified information is a crime. So they go to a judge. The judge looks at the evidence and says, wire the reporter. You have a problem with that?
I, as somebody who has gone through litigation involving the U.S. government, the government can claim anything is classified. The government can claim all kinds of things, and you have no recourse.
Look, I'm skeptical, too.
Hello? We missed you. You're skeptical, too.
How can you stop? The leaks are all one way. And the way they go is destroy the president of the United States. Okay, that is what the leaks are. It was just like destroy Bill O'Reilly. Okay, so we'll say things to the.
Bill, this is so frustrating. Do you have a landline? Maybe we can take it.
It's the dog's fault. The dog got him into another room,
yeah.
And now we're losing his connection. And perhaps someone in the government is spying on him. That could also be what's
going
on.
But I would
on.
Agree with that of Bill O'Reilly, because he's a danger.
Yeah, he is a danger. That's true.
Hello, Bill, are you there?
We'll have to reconnect.
We lost him. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, a little issue there with the connection. It's an interesting point, because, you know, James Rosen at Fox News was targeted as well by the government, and they looked into his private messages. I think Bill is back.
I'm sorry.
That's
I
all right.
have to apologize. It's all my fault. The dog is running wild here.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Stu has got to come over. Stu is a dog whisperer.
Right.
Yes. Okay. You've got to come over and whisper into this terror dog's head.
So Bill, what is the difference between this and James Rosen?
Okay, the difference is that Rosen, and I know this case very, very well, Rosen was not doing anything politically driven, all right? So you basically have a system now where all of these leaks are designed to do one thing, remove a sitting president. It's subversive. It's not journalism. It's subversive, all right? So let's leak stuff to any vehicle we know hates Trump, and they'll just print the leaks.
So wait, Bill.
Yeah.
This is the situation that I was in. I was given classified documents by government sources that showed corruption. The government would not release any of that information. Would not verify any of that information. I had testimony from people who risked their lives to be able to get this out.
That's a totally different situation.
How? It's the same thing.
No, it isn't the same thing.
Obama could have said easily, this is one-way leak. Glenn Beck has been after us forever. This is just
no,
a hatchet job.
You actually had people, all right, who you could point to giving you information that could be verified. Okay?
I could No, wait. I could not while I was doing it. I could not.
In order for there to be a warrant on you, and I don't even remember, was there a warrant? I don't think
no,
there
was
not.
No, 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 there was not.
You,
no, it was a, okay, here's right. a here I was a I was I went to court, sued by somebody who said that wasn't me, and that's all a lie. I had government documents that showed, yes, it was. The government didn't come after me, but the government would not release any information. And so I had no case without that.
It's a different situation, though, because you basically were reporting a story given to you by a verifiable source. You needed backup. The government wouldn't do it because they didn't like you. If you had been with the New York Times, they would have leaked that stuff out and saved their butts. This is different. This is basically there are leakers inside the Trump administration that know they can go to reporters who will print anything they tell them without verification, anonymous sources, doesn't have to be true. Time after time after time, it isn't true. It isn't true. Yet it's the lead story, and CNN panel gets on, what do you make of this? Oh, it has to be true. I mean, this is really dangerous to a free society. You just can't have this. And the Justice Department's responsibility to, if they believe this is a contrived political subversion, to make a case on it.
And it does appear that the guy did lie to the FBI about whether he was contacting these particular reporters.
The investigation is the investigation. I can't do that for them. But I am sensitive to the fact that you don't want the government raiding newsrooms. But let's get back to the original premise of my column on BillO'Reilly.com. Journalism's collapsed. It's not that the American public are tired. They're sick and tired.
Okay, so here's
you're absolutely correct. They don't even know what they're doing to themselves. They don't even know when Trump leaves office, Nobody's going to watch TV news anymore.
Okay, so
why would you?
You're right. They're killing themselves. But let's not kill ourselves with them. You know, the founders were quite clear on freedom of the press. In fact, if I could quote Hay, he said, say that the citizen and the press should have the right to say everything which his passion suggests. He may employ all of his time, all of his talents, if he is wicked enough to do so, in speaking against the government in matters that are false, scandalous, and malicious, and still be safe within the sanctuary of the press, even if he condemns the principle of Republican institutions. Blah, 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 blah. However upright he may say these things, to the basis motives, even if he ascribes to them measures and acts which never had existence, thus violating at once every principle of decency and truth.
Who was that man?
Hay.
I would have executed him. Right there on the spot.
He actually was forwarding the winning argument.
All right. So what is more, you know, and believe me, he had no idea about cable and about internet and about all of this. What this guy's actually saying is, look, you can destroy any American citizen by leaking false stories about them.
Press.
That will
press.
Be printed, and their whole lives will be ruined, and that's okay.
No, press and the government. This is about the government. This is not about...
Who's going to regulate the press? Nobody regulates the press, Beck. There's only one entity that can do it. That if you violate national security laws and you leak stuff that you are commanded not to leak by law, you can be investigated. Look, you didn't have any recourse and I didn't have any recourse when we were attacked falsely. We couldn't defend ourselves, okay, against this onslaught of BS. All right, that's it. Government can't do anything to help us. But if you're subverting the government by falsely printing things that you know aren't true and you don't even care to check out for the only intent of removing the president of the United States, that is sedition. And it has to be investigated.
Doesn't the First Amendment, though, Bill, pretty much guarantee that the government is not going to regulate the press?
It's not about regulating the press. It's about setting standards for people working for government, leaking classified information.
Right. Okay, so wait a minute. Okay, so now hang on just a second. Then this is a different story. If you're not going after the member of the press, okay. If
no,
you're going,
they're just being investigated to try to nail the subversive within the government that's illegally leaking the national security stuff. That's what's going on. Look, I'd like to put everybody in jail, every dishonest journalist in jail. I'd love to do that. I'd love to put on every dishonest teacher, but we can't, all right, because they always lose my opinion or whatever. But, look, we're coming to a point in this country where one of the institutions set up to protect us, we the people, has fallen apart. It's corrupt, all right? It doesn't look for the truth. It doesn't care about the truth.
I agree with you.
And that's the column I wrote on BillO'Reilly.com. You can just look, turn on that cable television, and listen to this propaganda day in and day out. Stacked decks all over the place, garbage that's reported that isn't true, no retractions, couldn't care less. I mean, it's just unbelievable to watch it happen.
Right. And that's why I kind of like to watch it, because it's a fire burning itself down. I don't want to be an arsonist setting fires in my own camp. I don't want to be setting fires to the Constitution. It'll burn itself to the ground. It will.
I agree 100%, but unlike you, I can't watch it. I get so angry and I'm sitting here going, here's this person being paid $1 million. What do you make of that?
I get just as angry as you do. But what are you going to do?
I'm doing what I can on running my own operation on BillO'Reilly.com, just as you are on
right.
the Blaze.
And you're doing well, and you're doing good, and you're
doing great.
Yeah, and you're go ahead.
We have to fight it now. in the precincts of individuality.
Yes.
I've had plenty of offers to come back on television, all right? But I'm not going to do it unless I believe that whoever's hiring me is going to stand behind me, all right? And is going to fight this stuff, because I'm going to have to take these people on. It is so corrupt, I can't tell you. Well, I don't have to tell you, because you know. But your listeners should know that what was set up to protect them, a press that would inform them honestly, is gone. It's gone. Thank you, Barack Obama. Thank you, Donald Trump. Both presidents drove that. Obama on the favorable side and Trump on the negative side.
Now, Bill, I want to change topics because you're even more fired up than your dog now. And that's not healthy. That's not healthy.
Don't know if you're eating the same thing.
Maybe the money's out. She's out getting a burger.
I want to see Bill if you're coming down for the museum next week with all of the Nazi SS stuff that's going to be here. You've got the big book coming out, Killing the SS. Really excited about that. I mean, any chance you're coming down to check the museum out?
I can't come down next week because I'm just inundated here, but I'm going to try to get a private showing of this.
Well, maybe. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't.
Here's the problem. If I come down to Dallas where you guys are, right?
Yeah.
Then you guys are going to want to hang with me.
No. No, we really won't.
I don't know how to handle
nope.
it, you know?
Nope. Not a chance. Wouldn't
come
happen.
On,
Bill O'Reilly, author of the new book, Killing the SS, The Hunt for the Worst War Criminals in History. It comes out September 18th. Thank you so much, Bill. Appreciate it.
Talk soon.
You bet. Bye-bye. I think he was fired up.
He was fired up.
And hard to argue with the passion and the feeling behind it because it's true.
I get nervous because, I mean, the way they got this guy was to go after the reporter's private encrypted messages and emails and all sorts of stuff. And it's like, well, you're getting into an area there that's really iffy.
It's all fine until it happens to you and our side. Liberty Safe. Great safes, and they're now making them really easy to own one. LibertySafe.com. You can buy a Liberty Safe at a great price and receive 12 months interest-free payments with zero down and zero APR. They even offer Liberty Safes for as low as $20 a month. These are just great safes that are going to keep your guns protected and out of the hands of anybody who shouldn't have them. All of your documents or your precious valuables, all in a Liberty Safe. Peace of mind. Lifetime warranty. In-home delivery service that is unmatched in the industry. When you buy a Liberty Safe, that's what you get. Liberty Safe, the best built safe on the planet. It's libertysafe.com. Go there now at libertysafe.com.
Glenn Beck.
Last night on the TV show at 5 o'clock, we showed the first graduating class of the year of our leadership training program here at Mercury One. And I mean, Stu just said, you know, you pay $50,000 a year to have your kids, you know, be educated and
speak like that once. If you have one conversation where they have that much knowledge and understanding of the world and its history,
oh my gosh,
you'd be thrilled with college. And here's a 2-week program and they're coming out sounding like that.
Yeah, and they were all, what we were talking about last night on TV was, you know, what did you learn? And boy, the stuff they learned and the understanding of it, even in 2 weeks, was phenomenal. If you or somebody that you know is between 18 to 24 and would like to be a part of our leadership training program, check it out now at mercuryone.org/LTP. It's amazing.
Glenn Beck.
President Trump's upcoming meeting with Kim Jong-un in Singapore, turning into the Super Bowl of diplomatic summits. Not for the historic talks, but for the advertising. Some lesser-known brands are seeing this as a golden opportunity to be seen in with the world's cameras all trained on Singapore. So scrappy companies that could never really afford, you know, $2 million Super Bowl ad are springing into action for plane tickets to send celebrity endorsers to Singapore. You know, like celebrity and movie star Dennis Rodman. And then that's it. I mean, you remember him from Double Team with Jean-Claude Van Damme, right? Yeah. No, I don't remember that either. But anyway, Dennis Rodman's agent, who knew he had one, confirmed this week that Rodman might be traveling to Singapore to offer moral support to President Trump and Kim Jong-un. Now, it turns out that Rodman also might have an additional reason for making the trip. A certain new cryptocurrency is negotiating a deal with Rodman to draw attention to their brand. And what exactly is this cryptocurrency? New Potcoin, man. Potcoin. That's right. Cryptocurrency that gives marijuana dispensaries and pot farmers access to banking services. No surprise, Potcoin was founded 4 years ago in Canada. Now, this would not be Rodman's first time to plug Potcoin, which I mean, it sounds like I'm down on Potcoin, but actually, I think this is the free market at its absolute best. You know, states decide they're going to sell pot. Okay. The federal government says, oh, yeah, but you don't have any access to any banking services. Okay. Welcome, Potcoin. The cryptocurrency has paid for his trip to North Korea last year, when he wore a Potcoin t-shirt and cap and then promoted it on Twitter. Nothing better than sitting next to a murderous dictator, having a good time advertising Potcoin. Potcoin spokesperson Sean Perez told the Washington Post, "We at Potcoin definitely believe that Dennis Rodman deserves the Nobel Peace Prize, jointly with President Trump and Kim Jong-un." Well, I remember the days that I was smoking pot every day. I probably would have agreed with you. Potcoin isn't the only company attaching itself to the summit. There was awkwardness during the summit planning this week as North Korea apparently insisted on someone else covering the cost of its accommodations in Singapore. So not only are they a communist nuclear regime that starves its own people, they're also cheapskates. But don't worry, the international campaign to abolish nuclear weapons and the travel booking site HotelPlanner.com are chipping in to foot Kim Jong-un's $6,000 a night hotel bill. You know what? Good. Good. It's the free market. If that wouldn't have happened, do you know who would be footing that bill? Us. And believe me, talk isn't cheap when it involves Kim Jong-un.
It's Friday, June 8th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
By the way, they better hurry up with the Potcoin thing, because it appears a bipartisan bill between Elizabeth Warren and Cory Gardner. Now, if you don't know Cory Gardner, you might not know. He's the guy that banned birth control.
Yeah, he banned birth control.
Yeah, he banned birth control.
Yeah. Well, that's at least what the ads against him said when he was running.
Has it happened yet?
Honey, Cory Gardner, he banned birth control.
Oh, sweetie. What was it? Oh, Snookums. She might have heard some weird nickname in that ad. We should dig that ad up. It's one of the greatest political ads of all time. And yet another example of how ridiculous campaigns are. Mm-hmm. Has Cory Gardner moved to ban birth control in any way? Does anyone believe?
Yes.
No.
Yes. No, he has.
Well, actually, in the ad, it said he banned it. So I must have missed that story. But Elizabeth Warren's on this bandwagon as well. This is interesting in that I think it appears today, as he was getting on the plane for the G7, that Donald Trump also said that he was supporting this. Now, he hasn't confirmed. He said he wants to see the details, but he says he's, generally speaking, behind it. It's called the 10th Amendment Through Entrusting States, the States Act. And the idea is to make it, if a state like Colorado legalized marijuana, they would be able to access banks and all of that. So the use for Potcoin might be going down the drain if this actually happens, considering you have Cory Gardner, the man who banned birth control, working along with Elizabeth Warren and Donald Trump on something may actually happen. The other reason you might say, well, I don't know, is Donald Trump going to support that? Because Trump is pretty hard on drug laws. He's a guy who has had death in his own family due to alcoholism. He's a guy who does not drink at all. He has been very hard on
I just got to it.
He
said we should have the death penalty for drug pushers.
Right, exactly. Right. That's a great one. However,
so I'm glad that he didn't do that. Instead, released the woman he released a couple of days ago, who was a drug pusher.
Exactly. So it's interesting that he is leaning this way. Mm-hmm. One of the crazy speculations out there, just to throw it out there, is that the real guy who doesn't like the idea of legalizing marijuana or pardoning people who have done drug crimes.
Oh, I know who you're going to say.
Jeff Sessions.
Oh, I thought you were going to say spooky dude.
No.
Because no. George Soros is also very, very, very concerned.
Oh, no, we should get to George Soros here in a minute, though. Okay. There's an update on that. But Jeff Sessions, and he's so annoyed with Jeff Sessions that he's like, you know what? Pardon all the people that Jeff Sessions doesn't want me to pardon.
Wow.
I mean, that's probably a silly nonsense, but it is interesting. It doesn't seem to fit with where he's kind of stood on these issues before. However, I think this is the right way, right? I mean, I think ideally you have a situation where states can make their own decisions on such issues. It's federalism.
So I don't exactly understand. This is just breaking now, right?
I don't understand
what this law is. This law is what? By the way, we confirm the 10th Amendment. Is that what that is? As a federal government, we're allowing states to honor the 10th Amendment.
Sort of. I mean, the idea that the law should exist, that marijuana is illegal federally, which, by the way, if you happen to be smoking it at this moment, it still is, right? I mean, everyone's like, oh, it's legal in Colorado. No, it's not. It's really not. Is Colorado in the United States?
Yes.
So, yeah, it's federally illegal, right? It's a
Do you know when we banned and made marijuana illegal? Do you know when that happened?
I've read this before, but I don't remember.
Fall of Prohibition. We had all those Prohibition guys. What are we going to do with them? We don't want to just close that down. You know, we should go after those dope-smoking beatniks. We should go after those people that are dragging our children down into reefer madness.
Reefer madness, yeah. I mean, look, there's been some bad Supreme Court judgments on this, even fairly recently, even by good justices, that people who grow pot in their own state, it's no interstate commerce. Remember, that was the one where they're like, well, if you grow pot in your own state, it never leaves, and it's consumed in your state, you are theoretically affecting the nationwide network and market of pot. Therefore, it's interstate commerce. Like, I mean, that's one of the worst cases of the use of the Commerce Clause that we've discussed over the years. But this one is saying, like, look, it's legal in these states. You shouldn't come after them. They should be able to have access to the banking system just like everybody else. And it's basically a move towards legalization, right? Or at least decriminalization. Where, I mean, Obama said these states can do this, and we're not going to send in raids to get people who are dealing with pot if they make it legal in their state. And he occasionally still did it, but that was the general tendency of the administration. Trump came in and said, well, I don't know if we're really on that bandwagon, and they've done some of that, but he seems to be now open to the idea, at least with marijuana, to say, hey, you know, let's let the states deal with that. So it's kind of an interesting development. And again, if you're giving a giant endorsement fee to Dennis Rodman, maybe you should know about this information, because this is the first time I believe Trump had commented on interest in this specific legislation. Which, again, with Warren and Gardner, the guy who banned birth control, on board, it might be something that can actually happen.
All right, let me switch horses here and jump onto the George Soros horse, which is fascinating that it is coming out right now. Have you been following the George Soros saga lately?
Well, of course I have. And finally, the New York Times. I mean, think of the hundreds of broadcasts you've done dedicated to the inner workings of the finances of George Soros.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you do it, what is it? It's a secretive company, a secretive organization that's hiding where they're putting their money.
They're not hiding. They're just there. It's a shell. It's a shell game.
It's a shell game.
They move money over here, and then they're one step away from George Soros, and so that can do a little bit more, and two steps away from George Soros, and it can do, you know, subversive things.
You might notice the entire process of a shell game is to hide. So that's why I thought hiding was an appropriate way to describe it.
Okay.
It's a shell game. Mm-hmm. You're hiding the nut under the shell.
Yeah.
The issue here is, the big deal is not that you found this, right? The big deal isn't that, you know, the Weekly Standard or National Review or Breitbart or some right-wing organization dug this out. The New York Times says it's the first time it's ever been reported. I was pretty amazed by this. It is a secretive entity. This is quoting the New York Times. Holds 15% of this this whole situation. They remain out of the spotlight because they vigorously avoid any public attention. A company controlled by top employees of the billionaire investor George Soros. I mean, to see them, Mr. Soros investment firm, Soros Fund Management, is behind the company SF Bloodstock.
Excuse me, what is the name of?
SF Bloodstock.
Oh.
They oversee
I gotta look up
the
where
ownership that... business. And they work at Gavin Murphy. He's an Australian based in New York. He served as the Soros Fund longtime tax counsel. He's the manager of SF Bloodstock. Christopher Naughton, chief financial officer for Soros's Fund's family office, president of SF Bloodstock, corporate filing show. Tom Ryan, an Irishman based in Lexington, Kentucky, is the team's Bloodstock agent. SF, which is part owner of Newgate in Australia, they're involved as well. Could not be determined how much money Mr. Soros's firm has committed to this business. Although we know, I mean, look at this write-up. I mean, finally, right? Like the New York Times has used their investigative abilities to dive into a Soros-based business and really tell the truth about where this money's going.
I have a feeling it's not, especially now that you've just done the tell on this show.
The sniff.
Mm-hmm. They're really showing us. Mm-hmm. That's the tell here. So,
and by the way, working with China on this, mm-hmm, as well. Mm-hmm. So let me give you the full story.
Yeah,
now,
okay.
Remember, and I'm serious, they legitimately did a major investigation into George Soros. They, mm-hmm, did everything you've done 100 times with George Soros and his financial interests. That's all completely true. Here's the topic.
Oh, boy.
If the strapping chestnut colt Justify wins the Belmont Stakes on Saturday to become the 13th horse in history to claim horse racing's Triple Crown, two of the three groups that have an ownership stake in the horse's breeding rights will be front and center in the celebration. Windstar Farm, China Horse Club owns 25%, but a third group, a secretive entity that holds the remaining 15%, will remain out of the spotlight because it vigorously avoids any public attention. It's a company controlled by top employees of the billionaire investor George Soros.
Oh my gosh.
They've dug into his finances to find if he owns a piece of a horse. All this time,
oh,
and they finally decide to look into it because he owns a piece of a horse.
You know, I'm looking while you do that. I'm looking up SF Bloodstock. How is that? I mean, who would get involved with something? And I keep coming up with it's the name of an old horse.
Yeah,
it's the name of a horse.
Bloodstock.
Horse.
Amazing. Oh, amazing. That is what they've uncovered in this massive investigation, which is printed here, what, 10 pages?
Yeah, well, don't worry that I think it was Hungary that has just banned him and his money from the state because they say, Soros is just trying to infiltrate and collapse our system. So he's a bad guy. But don't worry about that, New York Times.
No, don't worry about that.
What's the deal with the horse race? Important to protect your home with home security. But now many home security companies are thinking, how can we protect your home and get the most amount of money? Instead of thinking, how can I protect your home? How can I protect people's privacy? Because that's what people are concerned about, especially if you have cameras in the house and you have somebody, monitoring your home 24/7. Who's monitoring? And what's the privacy like? SimpliSafe got to work on this, not only to develop a great system that puts you in charge because you own the system and the monitoring is only $14.95 a month and you can cancel at any time. I mean, there's no contract to it at all. But they also wanted to make sure that any cameras that you might have in the house that's going to catch the bad guy breaking in are only on and open when you want it to be. And so they went back to the drawing board. They had already designed this great camera. They went back to the drawing board just before they released it, this a few years ago, because they said, I don't want a camera on in my home all the time. I want to know when that's on and when it's off. Well, we'll put a light on it. That wasn't enough. They went and they found the exact kind of metal that would hold up, that was thin enough, but still make enough of a sound, not too much noise, but it, every time it would open, you would be able to hear it. Closed. So they put the light on it, and they made it so you can hear it, so you could trust it. Protecting your home, protecting your privacy, it is Simply Safe. SimplySafeBeck.com. Go there now. 10% off the entire home security system at an unbelievable price. SimplySafeBeck.com. That's SimplySafeBeck.com. So, Stu, did you remember the story we talked about the other day about the AI Norman that MIT tried to take this AI algorithm and just feed it stuff from, as we reported the other day, the dark web, and it turned into a psychopath?
Yeah.
Okay.
Really bad idea.
Yeah, really bad idea. Mm-hmm. Well, there's stories out now that are saying, no, it wasn't the dark web. It is just one Reddit user that is, let me see if I can quote it exactly here, that is dedicated to document and observe the disturbing reality of death. So it's just one Reddit user that is drilling deep down on this. They expose this AI to that. And now the ink blot test, the average AI sees a black and white photo of a small bird. Norman sees the AI. Man gets pulled into a dough machine. Think of that.
Where did they see that?
Right? And it's inkblot test after inkblot test, and keeps coming up with that stuff. Now, everybody's like, okay, that's a really bad idea. Let's not do that to AI. But I was thinking today, this isn't the dark web. This is on Reddit. We say that, you know, there's an old Sufi saying that says, that which you gaze upon, you become. This is AI reality and evidence of that truth. That which you gaze upon, you become. What are we gazing upon every day? What is it that we're, you know, as we're looking at, I mean, let's just take it out of our kids and just put it on ourselves. As we're looking at outrage after outrage after outrage, we're doing all of these things, and it's anger building upon anger, building upon anger. And we're watching it, angry, vengeful people. I mean, is there a possibility that maybe that's part of the problem, is we're gazing upon this too much? And when it comes to our kids, we all say, oh, well, our kids know the difference. Okay, all right. Well, some do, some don't. But if we keep feeding them this garbage, eventually, isn't what we just found out with Norman the same thing that's happening with us? Are we not? I mean, we are AI. You know, we're intelligence. We're authentic intelligence. And we're feeding it in. And AI is trying to be like us. And so at the very basic stages, they're saying, let's just feed it a steady diet of this and see what happens.
I mean, it's true. I mean, look, it's obviously true. I mean,
of course,
you know,
it is.
When your kids watch lots of sports, they want to play sports. When you spend time with an old friend, you think, I got to spend time with my old friends more often, right? I mean, you know, like, of course there's some influence. It gets cartooned into every single person that watches violence is going to become violent?
No,
that's not it. But there is a cultural movement that happens over time.
Right, and it explains the 25% increase in suicide rates in America.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck program.
We would love to have you here at our studios a week from today, all next weekend. So starting, I think it actually starts Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And am I doing a dinner? There's a special dinner on what night is that, Marissa? Thursday night. Do we have it? I'm doing a special dinner. And a film screening and a personal tour. This is something you don't want to miss. It is the screening of Operation Toussaint, with a question and answer from the members of the Underground Railroad team and the Nazarene Fund, also the director of the film. This film is unbelievable. You really need to see it. And I believe there's also a dinner involved, perhaps. And then I'm going to take you...
Friday, maybe?
Yeah, I'm not... Friday, June 15th, yeah. 6:30 here at the studio. So a week from tonight at 6:30 here at the studios. And we'd love to have you. All you have to do is grab your tickets now. You can find them now at mercuryone.org/TNF June 15th.
Unfortunately, Pat will be out of town. I will be doing a tour with Jeffy, however. Which is
if you do it
real
Friday. Are you doing it Friday or Saturday? Are there tours on Friday?
There's tours on
you can
Thursday. I just realized I'm not leaving until Saturday morning.
Oh, you should come Friday.
Yeah, I want to.
At least check it out Friday.
Yeah. Do you know that we have the Gettysburg Address coming?
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's amazing.
Like the actual?
Yeah, the Gettysburg Address. The Gettysburg Address. In his own hand. Gettysburg Address. Isn't that incredible?
That's really cool. Again, on loan from the Lincoln Library?
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes. Really incredible.
Wow.
So anyway, we have that going on. Also, we have an update on Venezuela coming up in just a minute. What is
it
like to live in Venezuela?
Fixed, right? It's
fixed, right?
It's better now.
No, it's not. Totally, no.
Socialism finally kicked in.
No.
They're finally doing it right.
Mm-mm.
Really?
We also had another suicide, famous suicide yesterday. You know, Kate Spade killed herself a couple of days ago. And now it is Anthony Bourdain from CNN and Parts Unknown. And
sad. He's, you know, not my favorite person ideologically speaking, and he attacked a lot of conservatives, but it's sad to see anybody, you know, suffer like that and take their own life. Sad.
Yeah, he was a kind of a show that everyone in cable news, all the like left-wing sort of journalists loved. Because number one, they all fret about, oh, we're not spending enough on newsrooms anymore. They spent plenty on Anthony Bourdain's show. I mean, they spent a fortune on that show. Mm-hmm. It was really highly produced,
really well done. On CNN, too.
Yeah, and that was kind
it
of
really
at the beginning.
It seemed like that's the show you do.
Well, it didn't seem to fit to me. But
that was what they made a move CNN a few years ago to try to do more like documentary style stuff.
And if they would have done more,
and like that was the first one, right?
Yeah, that was
about the first thing they did.
Yeah,
yeah, that was about the first thing they did. They've done a bunch of documentaries though since. Some of them have been.
Everybody else's culture was kind of better than ours too.
Well, that was kind of, and that's
that
one of the
sort
things.
Of feel.
Yeah, like it had a journalists look at that show in a little bit of a way of like a Hunter S. Thompson or. You know, these sort of journalists that go and get in the middle of it and they go explore their cultures and they just, you know, they drink a bunch of, you know, drinks and they sit back and they try crazy foods and they, you know, it's not about
it's Ernest
all this.
Hemingway.
Right. Yeah.
And
those
sadly,
guys, yes.
Ernest Hemingway.
Things. Yeah.
Hunter S. Thompson and Anthony Bourdain, all same characters and all revered by people in the, on the left and in the press. They all committed suicide.
Yeah.
They all committed suicide.
Well, it's a weird thing. I think you're chasing something
you are.
That's not real, right? Like, I mean, you're kind of always looking for the crazy chicken foot food that's going to taste better than the last chicken foot food that you had.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever spider you're about to eat is going to be the one thing that puts you over the top in the greatest food of all time. And so you're kind of chasing something without... You're chasing that night, right? It's a great food, great drinks, great friends. That's a night. That's fun. There's nothing wrong with a night like that necessarily, but it's, you know, if that's what you're chasing as your life goal, I think it's got to be somewhat empty.
I think the only one who has conquered this that I know of that could have been this way, who lived this kind of life, is Anderson Cooper. I mean, the reason why he goes and travels around is because he's trying to, you know, solve the riddle in his head. You know, on his father and his brother's death, you know, I'm capable of defending myself. I'm capable. I can go anywhere and I will survive. I will survive no matter what is thrown my way. That's the demon that he wrestles with. And that's why he would go out all the time, but he is able to then stop and be at home and be a normal person. I mean, Ernest Hemingway wasn't able to do that.
Well, if you combine a real clinical depression with this, you know, sort of world, I feel like it's got to be, and turns into
impossible.
A really dark place, I guess.
I haven't seen many people discuss whether or not he had, you know, real
They said that he was happy.
Well, they said he was happy. I have seen he's talked about depression and alcoholism and things like that in the past. I mean, I don't know what stage he was in with that stuff now. But, I mean, the show was pretty successful for them, I think. And
I think so.
Yeah, so
you're not losing another alcoholic. There's not a problem there, though. You know, those alcoholics, they're just
glad you're an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm. Well, other than me,
you're the one important.
I'm the one that is different. I'm the one that's different. So, Pat, what's on your mind before we let you scoot off to your own, you know, radio extravaganza?
Well, I'm about to talk about the West Alabama prohibition on harsh text messages.
Wait,
what?
Hold it, what?
West Alabama University has banned harsh text messages.
Can I tell you something?
Includes like all caps.
This is crazy. This is, you know how
send
the
a frowny face.
You know how the left has always said, oh, you know, these parochial schools that are cracking down and you can say this and you can't say that and you can't live this way. They're doing it.
Yeah.
They're doing it. What is a harsh text?
And who decides? I guess the West Alabama University administration does. But if I send you a poop emoji, is that too harsh?
Does it have eyes that are kind of blinking?
Yeah.
Yeah, then it does. It's fine.
It's okay. Well, yeah. It's not harsh. Okay. Yeah.
You send it to me with the eyes like squinty, like it's angry. Then like that's an angry piece of poop.
Right.
Then I'm,
you're right.
Then I'm
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, if your tummy hurt before the angry piece of poop, then that's harsh.
Right.
How about we teach our kids how to deal with a little bit of adversity instead? I know we're trying to stop the bullying thing, and I'm all about that. I hate bullying, but banning harsh text messages,
I will tell
not
you,
helpful.
I am in the middle of writing our next book, which is Addicted to Outrage, and I'm really having a hard time on one thing, because I'm trying to say, look, here's why the addiction is happening. This is why it's really bad. You don't want to be a part of that. I have to be really careful, because I'm not saying let's all just get along. Your outrage many times is justified.
Yeah.
It really is justified.
Yes.
So it's not like, hey, we all just got to not be addicted to outrage. It's that we also have to toughen up. Mm-hmm. We have to be kind and toughen up.
We've talked about it many times. We've got to stop the participation trophy mentality. We got to stop dumbing down curriculum and stop changing the grading system.
Whoa, please, it's a little harsh.
I'm sorry.
Wow. It's a little harsh.
I'm sorry.
What kind of emoji did you send with that message you just said?
I sent a smiley face.
Oh, okay, gosh.
Just to soften the blow, yeah, because that would have been too harsh.
I just sent you some poop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No,
but it was smiling. It was smiling.
Oh, okay.
Smiling.
Okay, good.
Is it possible that these colleges are just looking for something to do? Because with Cory Gardner banning birth control, the sex on campus,
no, I don't think
you're not spending as much time with that.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I heard an interview on TV where the woman was asking, you know, how this happened. Here, can you play a piece of that? There.
They're all out.
Did you try the corner market?
Of course.
Grocery store?
Sold out.
Drug store?
Come on.
So everyone's sold out of condoms. How did this happen?
Cory Gardner banned birth control, and now it's all on us guys. And you can't find a condom anywhere.
Nowhere.
And the pill was just the start. Yeah. The Pell Grants my little brother was counting on for college, Cory cut them.
Oh no.
Climate change that everyone knows is weirding our weather. Cory flat out denies it. Sweet Pea, Cory denies science.
I forgot about that.
This guy has no idea what's going on in the real world.
But they do.
Sweet Pea.
Don't let Cory's world become your world. Vote by mail today or vote in person November 4th.
It's unbelievable,
keep
Sweet
Cory Gardner out of the
sweetheart.
Senate.
They didn't keep him out. And now, all right. Look what happened.
All right, sweetheart.
Look what happened.
Okay.
Come on, Sweet Pea.
Okay, toots. Isn't that amazing? It's trying to appeal to progressives in the middle. Sweet Pea.
I know.
So hey, ridiculous. Sweetheart. Hey, what Tootsie are the Pants.
Worst ads of all time. Every time I hear Cory Gardner, he does. And I will say this, it's worked to the point that I completely associate him with banning birth control, even though he hasn't done anything like that. It has worked. He has a bill. Any bill he proposes, like it's Cory Gardner, and it's like, oh, it's got to be about banning
It's going to be up
control.
To us guys, and you can't find a condom anywhere. All right. Let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It is Car Shield. I have to tell you, Car Shield has saved me a buttload of money and hassle. And it'll do the exact same thing for you. If your car breaks down, you're going to get hit with a huge repair bill. If that stupid little light at check engine goes off, you're probably going to get hit with a repair bill. When you go in and just change your oil, has anybody ever walked up and they're like, well, we also, and you just immediately break out in a cold sweat and you're like, you also what? You found a bunch of money in my engine? What?
Just happened to me. I was at a store, like, just same exact thing. I had this basic thing I was getting done, and they started that message. I was like, oh no, what are they going to say? $25,000 for what?
Car Shield. Get your car covered. CarShield.com. I want you to call CarShield.com right now at 1-800-CAR-6100. 1-800-CAR-6100. Mention the promo code Beck or visit CarShield.com. Promo code Beck. That's promo code Beck at CarShield.com. Deductible may apply. We have something coming up next on Venezuela. Imagine a darkness, something darker and scarier than the deepest parts of the ocean. Darker than that awful darkness of space, the darkness of night, a house shackled by darkness because there isn't any electricity, and there hasn't been for months. But then again, that's not the dark I'm talking about. The real dark is the dark part that lives inside of you. The things that you now have to do on a daily basis just to stay alive. Around the corner, you hear the bestial shouts from a Caracas jail. The prisoners have taken over, at least that's what you hear. They feel they can do a better job of controlling themselves than whoever has been doing it lately. It was 100 years ago that this country was lavished in wealth. Not too long ago, you too were rich. You were healthy in that chubby 19th century Russian diplomat way. You ate well. You probably ate too much. Black turtle beans and fried bananas. Asado negro. You drool just thinking of the tender shredded beef and the carrot and oregano tinged broth. You strode through steakhouses on special occasions. You ate T-bones like a Texan. You drank Chilean wines, Malbec from Argentina. Occasionally, a glass of cognac. Not because you were drunk, but because you could. Because you enjoyed the sprouting goodness that life had to offer. Man, that life, it seemed like it was never going to end. Now look at yourself. You're a bag of bones. Bones jutting out like false teeth. At times, you think about all the energy you waste just breathing. What happened? Now you can barely afford a single egg. One egg. Eggs that fall out of the backsides of chickens, and I can't afford it? Your mouth quivers at the thought of a fried egg tender. So tender it pops open with just the prod of a fork oozing onto the fried papaya and rotisserie chicken. You've lost 120 pounds since it all started going to hell. And now, you're in it firmly. You weren't rich, you were middle class, lower middle class even. That's just how good things used to be. Although there was always the cinder block hovels that you can see from the plane as you land in Caracas. But now it has spread. The office where you used to work as an accountant, it's now empty, abandoned, overtaken by squatters, people like you who lost everything, who limp a little more each day toward their death. Men all in black now patrol the streets with shotguns, black bulletproof vests and black tarp-like shirts and black pants, black military boots. People hamper cars in the street because there's nowhere to go. Nothing to do. Gasping a bit, you rest below a crucifix statue, the left tilting head of Christ emblazoned in a soft and sad light, the burnished rise of daylight breathing into a new day. Looking at Christ, perhaps for the first time you understand suffering. You understand his defeated look, the look of hopelessness and violence and death. The hopelessness of surrendering, and surrendering until it stops mattering. You hope. You have that one hope left that all things will change.
But you really hope that just anything begins to change. It was all so promising at the beginning. Everybody was going to be able to live the high life. And now, only a handful are. And they are the ones that live behind the gates. This, you think to yourself, this is the socialist utopia they promised all of us as Venezuelans? As you sit there under the statue, you begin to replay it all in your mind and wonder, where are all those Americans, those celebrities, those from Hollywood that praised our leaders and helped convince us that this was the road to prosperity? I wonder what they're eating tonight.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.